Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio. Special Operations Military News and straight talk with the guys in the community.
Hi, welcome back to Soft Rep Radio. I am your host, Brad, and I have a very special guest today, and I'm going to tell you about him real quick here. So first of all, his name's Douglas Lute, and he's a part of a group of former national security advisors under the Bush administration who are set to release a new book, Handoff, The Foreign Policy George W. Bush Passed to Barack Obama on February 15th. The book makes public for the first time a set of 30 newly declassified transition memoranda that were prepared by President Bush's National Security Council staff for the incoming Obama administration to outline the key foreign policy challenges that it would be facing. The book features self-critical insights and analysis from a handful of National Security Council experts who advised President Bush, including the former Deputy National Security Advisor for Iraq and Afghanistan, our guest, Douglas Lute. Now, he currently serves as the CEO of Cambridge Global Advisors, LLC, which is a certified service disabled veteran-owned small business. For those of you out there that are in the small business world and are veterans, he's one of those. Here we go. So in the book, Douglas contributes to the analysis of President Bush's foreign policy legacy with an in-depth look at military intervention in Iraq and Afghanistan. So with that introduction, welcome to our show.
Oh, great. It's really good to be with you.
Yes, thank you. So tell me, how old were you when you joined the Army?
Well, so look, I grew up in Michigan City, Indiana, on the southernmost point of Lake Michigan as it juts down around Chicago into northern Indiana, and left there when I was 18, went to West Point, and frankly, never went back. So I guess the short answer to your question is I was 18 when I went to West Point. Yeah.
And were you like basketball? And
well, if you're in Indiana and you're growing up, you're playing basketball. I did that as well as everybody in my age cohort, but not well enough to make anything of it beyond sort of high school. So I didn't play at West Point, but played recreationally up until maybe 10 years ago or so when, you know, eventually your knees give out.
Sure. Now, what was your academia focused on in West Point?
So at the time, everybody who graduated from West Point in those days got a Bachelor of Science degree because West Point originated, you know, 100 some years earlier as an engineering school, right? So as a legacy of that beginning, everyone gets a Bachelor of Science degree. But we did not yet have majors and minors when I graduated. They do now. But I focused on international security affairs. So pretty much the sort of thing that I ended up doing later, much later in my Army career.
Yeah. So here you are, a young man going into West Point, 18, saying, when I grow up, I want to be involved in international affairs. And now when you look back on your younger self, telling yourself you're going to be involved in international affairs, did you believe it?
Well, you know, it was so far over the horizon for me. You know, when you're an undergraduate student, I think most undergraduates have some image of what they want to do, right? But I suspect the hit rate, that is, yeah, the connection between what they end up doing and what they imagined they were going to do as undergraduates isn't very high, actually, right? And as you know, life takes a lot of sort of twists and turns and unforeseen opportunities and so forth. So I had a persistent interest in foreign policy and international affairs and sort of strategic, geostrategic issues. But, you know, when you're in the Army as a lieutenant, a captain, a major, even a colonel and lieutenant colonel, you know, you've got your head down doing what the Army expects you to do.
Right.
And you don't really have, I mean, it can be a passing interest, but it's mostly that. You're consumed as an Army officer with day-to-day affairs and, you know, the next deployment or the next National Training Center rotation or, you know, whatever's around the corner. So I had this interest, but it didn't really sort of come to fruition until later in my career. I suppose as a lieutenant colonel, I first sort of, you know, reconnected with the sort of strategic level because I was on the joint staff in J5. This is strategic plans and policy. And it happened to be 94 to 96, right in the middle of the Balkans Wars. So at that level in the Pentagon, in the directorate that was dealing with the Dayton Accords and all that, working for General Wes Clark, who was working on the Dayton Accords to try to bring a close to the violence in Bosnia. That's where I really got my sort of sank my teeth into international affairs.
Yeah. And so as you get from lieutenant colonel, as you, you know, climb the ladder of lieutenant, captain, you know, moving on up, lieutenant colonel, you hit brigadier general in your life, right? And so what was that like, that moment when you're like, hey, it's coming?
Well, so this is a big for Army officers, and I think for the other services as well, that the gate leading to flag rank, right? Mm-hmm. So in the Army, brigadier general or admiral in the Navy is a big cut. And, you know, you aspire to it, but you're never quite sure how you're going to match up. And there are, it's not predictable. It's not fully predictable. I mean, nobody should have confidence that they're going to make flag rank.
Right.
There's just too many variables, right? Things happen. Before I made one star, brigadier general in the Army, however, I had a really unique experience. And that was first to command a cavalry regiment, which took me back to my roots as a young officer because I'd served in the same regiment. But then right after regimental command, went back to the Pentagon and served as the executive officer for General Hugh Shelton, who came out of the soft community and was then the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So that was a particularly interesting portal. Mm-hmm. To watch what was happening at the senior most levels of our military as I worked at his side, right? And in particular, I worked at his side on 9/11. So that was a real eye-opener in terms of the way sometimes history presents events like 9/11 that significantly change everything that follows.
Yeah.
Right? So on September 10th, we could not, in 2001, we could not have imagined the full impact of the next day. Right. September 11th. But beginning on September 12th, the world had changed, right? And your listeners, all of us, Americans especially, right, have vivid memories of where we were on 9/11. And to some extent, Rod, we're still living with the consequences of that sunny day in September 20 years ago. So that was sort of a...
Where were you when that did happen?
So on that day, I was with the chairman, General Shelton.
Oh, wow.
We had taken off from Andrews Air Force Base on a military passenger aircraft, headed to a meeting in NATO. I think it was a meeting in Romania or someplace, right? It was a long scheduled meeting. So right. We had taken off early that day, overflown Manhattan, crystal clear blue skies, and we were making our way to Europe. As we approached the boundaries of the United Kingdom, one of the military pilots came back into the cabin, the passenger cabin of the aircraft, and said, "You know, Colonel Lute, we've been watching or listening to BBC yeah. radio, because we're kind of bored up here in the cockpit. And, you know, there's this peculiar report that a plane has struck one of the Twin Towers." And we thought, gosh, you know, that's really strange, because we had overflown Manhattan. It was a crystal clear right. sky. How could this happen? You know, we had a failure of imagination, right? We imagined that this was some small, you know, single pilot, privately owned aircraft. You know, maybe there was a mishap in the cockpit or a health issue or something with the pilot, and it was a tragic incident, right? A few minutes later, okay, same pilot comes back and reports the second tower was hit. I said, okay, this is obviously no accident. I went back into the personal cabin where the chairman was and said, "Look, we've had not one, but two strikes." And he said, "Okay, turn us around. We're not going to Romania for the NATO meeting. We're going back to Washington." So we turned around. We're refueled in midair. As we approach the U.S. airspace, which had been shut down, right? All planes had been grounded at that right. point. We picked up a fighter jet.
Escort,
I suppose.
Well, yeah.
One on each wing. And they were to escort us back to Andrews Air Force Base. We overflew Manhattan. And this time now, the smoke plume was at 20,000 feet. So we literally sort of overflew ground zero, landed at Andrews Air Force Base, which is out in Maryland outside D.C. As soon as we landed, we could see on the horizon the smoke from the Pentagon, which had also been struck. We made our way by motorcade to the west lawn of the Pentagon, which had been, and a couple images, you know, Rob, that just stick with you, that things you can't quite explain. One is that as we approached the site of the attack, which was still sort of smoldering, the fire had mostly been put out, still smoldering, the casualties had been evacuated and so forth. Someone had the instinct, I guess, to rope off the whole west lawn of the Pentagon with the sort of yellow police line marker tape. You know, we sure. thought, like, okay, was that really necessary? I mean, it's pretty clear that something happened here, you know, but
right.
somebody was following the SOP, right? The standard operating procedures. I remember stepping over this tape, this yellow crime scene tape. And as we made our way closer to the point of impact, not getting too close, but, sure. you know, just getting closer, there was an aircraft seat, almost undamaged, sitting on the lawn of the Pentagon. And I thought to myself, this bothers me, not bothers me, but it, you know, it puzzles me to this day.
Right.
How did that seat survive the impact and end up on the lawn when the rest of the plane was destroyed on impact with the building? And it's just one of those peculiar things that I can't explain, right? But anyway, that was life on 9/11 with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, "Somebody's in the house," and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
You know, I was there, I was a young man, I was 21, and my dad comes in the room, he's like, "Hey, the first tower got hit, turn the TV on." We were watching that, and we were just watching that. My mom was upstairs, my wife at the time, my girlfriend was in the room, and I had just gotten out of the Air Force. My dad was just a retired SF guy. He's like, "Let's watch this." So we're watching it, and then a second one went in. And at that time, he looked at me, and he said the same thing that you thought is, that's two strikes, that's an attack. And then he just looked at me, and he said, "We're under attack." And I was like, "Oh wow, Dad never really talks like that."
Chilly, isn't it?
Yeah, it was very chilly. And that puzzles me about the whole situation and where we're at today. And I know there's been many attacks on the World Trade Center previously to that one. That one was the one that stabbed it in the heart. You know, in the 93, there was the underground, right? You know, that did kill people, you know, sadly, but just didn't do the damage they were looking for, that collateral damage. And so, I mean, it changed the world. Right? The economy, the banking world, the industry, everybody was all of a sudden, "Let's see your books." They're like, oh, it's all in the Trade Center.
Right. No, and I mean, this is one of those historic moments, which, you know, tend to come around every 10 or 20 years. I think before 9/11, the last such sort of pivotal moment in my career was the fall of the Berlin Wall, right? In 89. Right. So you had the end of the Cold War, the fall of the Berlin Wall, 2 years later, the breakup of the Soviet Union in 91. That was one of these pivotal moments.
Right.
Then for me, the next one was 9/11. Right. So yeah. 10 years later, 2001. And I got to tell you, even as we're recording this podcast, I think we're in the midst of another. And that is the war in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I think that the Russian invasion of Ukraine a year ago, so February of 22, will in time prove to be as eventful, as pivotal as those previous two. So once every 10 or 20 years, you know, we get an inflection point, a pivotal point like this.
Right. And so when that did go on, when Russia did invade Crimea in 2014, when the airliners were getting shot down by their weaponry, supposedly saying, "Stay out of our airspace." Okay, commercial airliners, just stay out of our airspace is the threat that comes back from the leadership over there at the time, who's still a leader of it today. It's like, why are we, I'd rather it be handled right now over there before it comes over here. We don't want it here. It's too late if it comes here to the U.S. We need to handle it right now. And I feel just, you know, I don't know, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think, look, we're going to feel the impacts of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the fighting remains contained inside Ukraine, right? So we're feeling this by way of global inflation. The global energy market for gas and oil is being re-engineered to cut off Russia, at least Russia's export of oil and gas to Western Europe. That's having a major impact on energy prices and energy flows and so forth. You know, if you are a country that imports grain or fertilizer, the war in Ukraine is having a major impact on your livelihood, because Western Russia and Eastern Ukraine is really the breadbasket of Europe and has for generations provided the grain and the fertilizer that has fed much of the global South. So think the Middle East and Africa and so forth, right? So look, these effects, you can't contain the effects of Ukraine in Ukraine, much like you couldn't contain the effects of 9/11, and you could not contain the effects of the fall of the Berlin Wall. So these inflection points, these historic moments, have a way of sort of propagating ripple effects or aftershocks that will be global. So we can't escape this. But I do agree with your point that, look, I think we have a responsibility to support the Ukrainians in part because of these global effects, but also in part because it's the right thing to do. Every nation, if you go back to the UN Charter, 1945, every nation has a right to defend itself. And the UN member states acknowledge that they have a right to support those who are defending themselves. And so I think even all the way back to the UN Charter, there's a mandate for us to do what we can to help the Ukrainians defend themselves. And how we do on this and how it turns out, which is, you know, not really the purpose of our talk today, but
well,
how it turns out will affect us as Americans.
I completely agree.
Look, it really comes down to two alternative views of how the world works, right? Does it work on the one hand in the model of nation states, meaning that nations, groups of people, can organize into states with certain responsibilities and privileges. Privileges like territorial integrity. In other words, your territory is your territory and somebody else can't seize it, all right? National sovereignty, meaning that that nation on that territory can take its own decisions about the nature of its government, its laws and culture and so forth, right? So that's kind of one model, the nation state model. The competing model is the model of empires, right? Which essentially says the strong will do whatever they like in their neighborhoods. And they will inevitably seek to expand their territory. Mm-hmm. And what Putin has declared publicly, I mean, we should just listen to him, right?
Is to bring the empire back. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. He's declared publicly that Ukraine and other nation states on the periphery of Russia should be part of Russia, should be controlled by Russia, should be dominated.
Empire. Yes.
And he, you know, he cites as his models for this, Peter the Great, Catherine the Great.
Exactly.
Time of the great Russian empires. So as I look back over last 100 years, right, much of the fight, much of the global struggle was between these two models. So World War I was about empires.
Right.
World War II was about empires, the Japanese Empire, the German Empire, right? The Cold War was essentially about empires.
Imperial, yeah.
And the imperial reach of the Soviet Union, right?
That's right.
And so this is familiar, right? This should feel familiar to us that this is an old continuing fight between these two models, nation states on the one hand and empires on the other. And what it really comes down to is, how do we want to live? Do we want to live in a world where empires can dictate and nation states are always at risk? Mm-hmm. Or do we want to live, on the other hand, with the basic rules of the road organized around nation states? That's fundamentally what Ukraine is about.
Ukraine would like to be just left alone and be a sovereign nation with its own integrity. And like, you know, we'll pump Russia's oil through our country to Europe. No problem. Like, there was no problem. There was no provoked message sent. There was no them rattling any sabers like, don't you dare from Ukraine to Russia. It was the opposite. And it has just progressed and progressed. And, you know, they want to annex all these different lands and say, now it's my turf. But but that's not how Ukraine entered into the treaties, that being your turf.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Ukraine's been a sovereign state since the Soviet Union broke up in 91. So for 30 years? It's a member of the United Nations. It's got an elected government. It has its own economy. It has its own sort of national instincts and culture and so forth. And they're not exactly the same as Russia. So the Ukrainians see themselves as a sovereign state. Mm-hmm. And that's how we, the United States, but
I see them that way.
The United Nations. Look, the United Nations 2 weeks had a vote. 2 weeks ago had a vote among the 190 members of the United Nations. All but in the vote, which was essentially, should we condemn Russia for the attack, right? All but 7 of the 190 some said, yes, we condemn, or we abstain. Some 30 or 40 abstained from the vote because they didn't want to irritate Russia, right? Sure. But the overwhelming majority of the members of the United Nations said, this is wrong. And this is not the model we want to live with. So I think it's pretty interesting. And I think that, you know, back to our original point, mm-hmm. I think February 24th, the date of the invasion last year, 2022, will eventually reside alongside September 11th, 2001, mm-hmm. and November 9th, 1989, when the Berlin Wall fell, as historical, impactful inflection points or pivotal moments.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
I'm usually a pretty impartial individual, but I can see that, you know, over there, there's thousands of people being shelled with these rockets and supersonics coming in and trying to be deflected by some type of defense system that they are that they have. But they're still coming through, and these people are in their homes and they're just sleeping. It's just, hey, you know, I get war is hell, but when you're just doing this one-sided situation, it's not really, you're just a bully. It's awful. It's awful. There's no.
It's blatant imperialism, and we shouldn't put up with it.
I hope that my listeners are of the same understanding too, and I don't want to put up with it. I want to be able to have this podcast and be able to talk with my guests like Doug and have these kinds of conversations without being censored, right? And not having to be fear being put into a political prison because I maybe offended somebody that's higher in a government than me and send suits to my door. Who needs that? You know, at least in America, we have, you know, the right to elect an official to help guide us with those rules of the road. All right. And then if we don't like it, we can re-elect someone else or try to, you know, stay vigilant in our own lanes, in our own states. Okay.
Right.
So
it really comes down to this, to your point about rules of the road. What are the rules of the road for the international community? And are those rules centered on the rights and responsibilities of nation states, or are those rules, do those rules permit some states to dominate others, as in imperialism? So that's what it's about. And Americans need to understand that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, just make sure that it's, I'm trying to put that out there. That's what we're all about today on this. So, you know, I'm a Cold War child, born in 77, you know, raised in a Warsaw era with my father always showing me little films and little models of like tanks and RPGs as a little kid in his office. You know, I'll tell you, there's a guy in the army or gal who gets to make models and like little trees and shrubs and like spray paint them, and they have a rank and that's a job. If you're looking to join the military, there are many options donations for you to go out there. This is not a paid sponsorship from anybody other than the American flag waving, saying, if you feel like you want to join the military, go talk to a local National Guard recruiter, go talk to a local career advancement, Army career recruiter, and say, hey, you know, I think I got what it takes. Can you test me? And they'll give you a test, and they'll test you. And if you got what it takes, go after it and be the one that...
You know, and to your listeners, you know, that's the right message. And it's also, you know, you don't have to join the military with the idea that you're going to stay there forever. Mm-hmm. I mean, a small minority stay for 20 years.
Sure.
But, you know, for your younger listeners, it's worth considering giving something back to America for 3 or 4 years. And by the way, in those 3 or 4 years of service, and whatever service you pick, or the National Guard, as you mentioned, right, you're going to pick up skills, and you're going to build your resume, and you'll be more employable after those 3 or 4 years than you were coming right out of school, whether it's high school or college. So think about that. It's not a bad way to transition into sort of adult life. And you get the added benefit of contributing to the country, to our country in the meantime. So it's really worth thinking about.
Yeah, and it's a whole sense of pride when you do it yourself. You know, if it's a conscriptions and it's a forced situation of a draft, you're not going to be too happy if you have to go and do this job no matter what. But if you just happen to say, you know, I want to give back and take the choice and choose yourself and pick your own destiny.
Like most things in life, right?
Right.
There's power of choice.
Right.
And, you know, our force today, nobody gets drafted, right? It's an all-volunteer force. 100% of the nearly 2 million total Americans who serve in some capacity in the military are volunteers, 100%. So for all of them, they're going to get the benefit of your point, which is, I made this choice. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, this is what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And again, you don't have to do it forever.
It also makes you want to be there because you chose it. You're like, hey, yeah, okay. Got to get up and do PT.
You want to be there every single day, right? But, you know, that's life, right? I mean, no matter where you work or whatever you take on, you know, every day is, you know, not the best day of your life.
Let's bring that full circle to you then. So you're a Ranger, right?
I am. Well, look, there's a difference, of course, in the Army, right, between being Ranger qualified, which means you wear the tab on your shoulder. Right. And serving in a Ranger regiment. So I am Ranger qualified. I went and graduated from Ranger school. Mm-hmm. But as an armor officer, not an infantry officer, I didn't serve in the Ranger regiment.
Oh, yes. That's mechanized. Right. So you're after. Awesome. OK. So you're a second cavalry. Is that my.
Right. Yeah. So when I graduated from West Point, my first assignment was in the 2nd Armored Cavalry Regiment. At that time, the Army had 3 of these regiments. And they were designed to be the eyes and ears, the reconnaissance unit, in front of an Army Corps, right? So if you think an Army Corps is a collection of Army divisions, so 3 to 5 Army divisions, one regiment served as sort of the scouts, if you will, in front of an Army Corps. And the regiment that I went to served in front of 7th U.S. Corps, which was in Germany. And the peak of the Cold War in those days. I signed into this unit in 1976, the year before you were born. And this unit was serving on border duty between East Germany, West Germany, and West Germany and Czechoslovakia. So along the Iron Curtain, essentially.
Yeah, really?
Where it had ended up in the lead of as the lead unit in Patton's Third Army when the war stopped in 1945. So where the war stopped, the lines were drawn on the map, and this unit had stayed in place from 45 for, you know, 30 years until I got there. And stayed in place all the way until the fall of the Berlin Wall, when Germany, a year later, became united and the Iron Curtain essentially collapsed. So, yeah, so I went right to this unit. It was fantastic. It was just a great unit. We had an active everyday mission along the border. We were the first to receive in Germany all the most modern equipment. So the first to receive the Bradley fighting vehicle, the first to receive Abrams tanks, and so forth, which always reminded us that our mission was important, because we took that first receipt of a new equipment as a signal that we were important to the Army.
Right.
And so it was a wonderful place to grow up as a young officer.
Right. And you were important to the army and obviously to the world and to the nation. I mean, look, batter up. Okay. Get in the batting deck, you know, get on. You're ready to go. You got the Abrams and the Bradley fighting vehicle. And how many troops does the Bradley fighting vehicle hold inside of it?
So it's got two configurations, right? There's a scout configuration, which is a crew of five, right? So a driver, a gunner, and vehicle commander, and then two scouts that come out the back. Two dismounted scouts. And then this basically the same vehicle, if it's configured for infantry, dismounts an infantry squad out the back. So the answer to your question is somewhere between 5 and sort of 10, okay. 10 or 12.
Depending on what's inside of it.
Yeah. Sure. And which of the two missions it's configured for, right? Is it a reconnaissance scouting vehicle or is it an infantry fighting vehicle?
And they're always communicating with each other once they deploy out of the back. And if they have to go into check a house, they're always like talking constantly with each other, letting everybody know what's going on.
Yeah, the dismounts can talk to the vehicle. And that's important because the vehicle, the Bradley, has significant direct fire capability. So it's got a 25 millimeter cannon on it, and it's got a 7.62 machine gun on it, and ultimately a TOW missile launcher as well. So it can provide significant fire support to dismounted infantry, which is the whole idea, right?
Right. As long as they stick there and protect it from any sticky bombs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
no, don't need no sticky bombs. So when you're talking about this new book that you have coming out, and so the name of
it. Yeah, so it's out. So I have a copy here for you. So it's called Handoff.
Yes.
Now, it's a little imposing, right? It's
that's a small book.
It's like 700 pages. But here's the basic idea of this book. So Steve Hadley, who was President George W. Bush's second national security advisor. Mm-hmm. So for the second 4 years of the Bush 8-year term, right? Hadley was the national security advisor. For the last 18 months of that period, I was Steve's deputy focused on Iraq and Afghanistan, right? So that's kind of the set. Because of the term limits, being that the president would only serve two terms, Bush in 2008 knew that he wasn't going to be president after the election, right? And the election was being waged between the two candidates, Obama and McCain, and that process was going on inside the White House while the campaign was going on outside the White House. Inside the White House, we were getting ready to hand off. So sure. That's the name of the book, Handoff, right?
Yeah.
And we did this handoff by way of drafting something like 30 memoranda focused on either geographical issues or functional issues that we knew the new administration, our successors, would have to deal with on the afternoon of Inauguration Day. Whoever is president was going to own these 30 issues, right? So we thought, and Steve Hadley actually shepherded or led this process. He thought, look, the responsible way to do this is to have the current team in the White House write a memo on each of these 30 topics. So for me, the Iraq war, the war in Afghanistan, right? Provide supporting documents, annexes and so forth, right? And bundle these all in sort of large government three-ring binders, right? All tabulated by issues.
Of course.
And whoever wins the election, right, we will deliver these binders.
There's a stack. Boom.
Yeah. And here's congratulations. You know, you're the new team. Now let's get to work. Okay. Yep. And then we offered on Iraq and Afghanistan, my two memos, we offered briefings to the new team. So once President-elect Obama wins the election, so between Election Day and early November and January 20th, Inauguration Day, you've got those several months of transition. So Bush is still president during that transition time, but the Obama team is standing up, right? People are being named and cabinet officers are being nominated and all that's happening, right? We offered to not only provide these binders, these transition memos, but also to brief in person the incoming team. And so these memos actually formed the substance of the handoff between one administration and the other. So that all took place at the end of 2008 and 2009.
Seems respectful, if I can just say that. Just seems respectful what you guys did.
It's a very responsible way to do transitions, right? It really is. And I applaud it. Why now do we publish this book? Well, the idea was hatched a couple years ago that what if we went back and looked at those 30 memos, all of which are classified? So, but what if we considered asking President Bush to declassify these 30 memos and then go back to the authors of the memos, find them, they're all over the country, right? Get a hold of these folks and ask them to reflect on what they wrote in 2008 and essentially ask the questions, what did we get right and what did we get wrong? So what you see in the book are, I don't know, I keep saying 30, but roughly 30 chapters that take everything from the fight against AIDS to the war in Iraq,
right?
Features at the start a declassified memo. It is the actual memo out of the archives that George Bush himself declassified, right? So you actually see that declassified memo. And those memos themselves are historical documents. So they're really kind of interesting. It was interesting to me because, of course, I don't have a copy of the memo. It's classified. So when it was declassified, it was kind of intriguing to go back and read the thing and say, you know, personally, what did we get right and what did we get wrong? But then behind each of these 30 memos in the book is a short chapter, an assessment by the authors of the memos of how did we do? And what proved right? What did we get right? And what did we get not so right? So it's also a very interesting, Rod. It's a very interesting sort of look in the mirror, an introspection, an honest effort to assess how we did back in 2008. I found the project kind of cool in the sense that it was an attempt to honestly look at something that we could have just left classified.
Right.
You know, the historians that unpack this 20 or 30 years from now, and they'd say, well, isn't this interesting? But this was a very deliberate, and I think a very responsible effort led by Steve Hadley and supported by the president. I mean, the president was personally involved in this.
Right. And so President Bush is basically just saying, hey, you know, I'm still around and I'm okay with this being, you know, talked about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And let's look at where I screwed up, if I screwed up, however that was, and or
well, look,
what
this
I did
is
right.
Very much like the original transition memos, which I think were a responsible effort to hand off from one administration to another, right? This book is a very responsible or honest way to say, how did we do? To look in the mirror and say, how did we do? And that honesty, that sort of willingness to be introspective.
Self-assessment.
Warts and all.
Yeah.
Says a lot about the people, about the president, but also about the people who staffed him. So I found it was first of all, it was a lot of fun after these years, right? To go back and reconnect with the others who are in the book.
Reunion tour.
Yeah, like, was it? Yeah. In fact, I mean, you mentioned that just as the book was released a couple weeks ago, President Bush and Mrs. Bush came to Washington and held a reception for all of us who contributed to the book. So at that reception was a reunion.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
I saw people that I hadn't seen in a decade, right?
Exactly.
So it was a lot of fun.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Friendships, camaraderie that has been built in your trenches in that side of governing and being in the military. A friend of mine who was a officer when I was enlisted in the Air Force, he's like, Rad, it's the same game. It's just different rank. It's just the same game. There's just someone above you. It's always just someone's there like, hey, you got something to do, you know, and you're just trying to get ranked. So bravo to the lane that you lived in and that you maintained. I also want to say good job on transitioning from one presidency to another, right?
So this is curious, you know, so in 2007, as part of the George Bush surge into Iraq, right? And this was so Bush committed the last 30,000 available troops into Iraq in an effort to quell the sectarian violence. So Sunni on Shia violence, largely tearing Iraq apart, right?
Right.
So in January 2007, he takes his decision, makes the announcement to the nation, commits the last 5 Army brigades, 2 more Marine battalions into the Anbar province. And a lot of your listeners will relate, might have been part of the surge.
Exactly. Right?
As part of this, he decides he wants to add someone to his staff to keep him personally informed of how the surge is going through the last 18 months of his administration. Because again, he knew he was going to leave, you know, at the end of his term. That someone turned out to be me, quite sort of unexpectedly. So in July of 07, I moved to the White House. And I take up this job of briefing him every morning on overnight events in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I imagine to myself, well, you know, I can do anything. You know, you can do push-ups for 18 months. There's only 18 months left in this administration. And right. Then I'll go back into the Army, right? At that time, an active duty 3-star. And I'll go back in the Army and pick up where I left off. That all looked good through the writing of these memos and through the election of Barack Obama and all that until Obama names retired General Jim Jones as his national security advisor. I had worked with Jim Jones at U.S. European Command as a 1-star when he was a 4-star U.S. European Command commander. Jones is looking at the Manning diagrams of the National Security Council staff and sees that my team and I are staffing Iraq and Afghanistan. He says, wow, you know, I've only got a couple weeks. Inauguration is on January 20th. After the president takes the oath of office on January 20th, we're going to own these 2 wars. By God, what are we going to do that afternoon? Right? So he asks my team and me to stay. This is not that peculiar because of the 15 people on my team for Iraq and Afghanistan, only one was a political appointee. All the others were drawn from the national security community. So CIA officers, USAID, State Department, military like me, and so forth. So we were nonpartisan. They didn't know we were Republican or Democrat. So it was safe, right? And of course, we said, of course, we'll stay across the 2 administrations. I imagined that extension, if you will, into the Obama administration might be for 4 or 6 months, giving the president and General Jones time to find their own team, right? People who had not worked for his predecessor, George Bush. It turns out I spent another 4.5 years working these issues for President Obama. And that total of 6 years in the White House across those 2 administrations was really the pinnacle of my career and was an experience that I wouldn't trade for anything.
And I doubt that you would ever change that. That's awesome. What a great legacy that you're going to leave. Thanks for taking on the call to do your job. We appreciate you. And I know that a 3-star general, which is a lieutenant general, is not an easy accomplishment to even get. You can only have so many generals in the military at the same time, and they have to all be within certain stars. And so, you know, and I'm just throwing that out there. But, you know, good job on what you're doing today. And I hope that you're super successful moving forward and, you know, continue being that.
Well, thanks. Look, Rad, thanks to you for taking on this initiative, too. You know, you wouldn't have to do this, but this is this podcast and your efforts, these kinds of conversations, right, are important ways to connect us to your community as well, right? And so that's an important dialogue. I know many of your listeners are veterans of probably of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and sometimes cold warriors as well, I suspect. So look, we're all part of the same community. We may not have always perfect alignment with our politics, but at the bottom line, we all are Americans. And whether you were in the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, active duty or reserve, on your uniform, it said U.S., right? So U.S. Army, that's U.S. Right. Air Force, right? And that's the part that I think unites us. So I applaud your effort to just connect to other veterans and so forth and try to have these kinds of conversations. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And with that, I'm going to say it's been wonderful to have you on. And if we have any other style of conversation to have in the future, I'd love to have you back on as a guest. It's been a pleasure.
Happy to do it.
Well, thank you. And to my listener out there that's listening, I really appreciate you. If you got any questions or comments and you want to comment down below, go ahead and drop them on whatever platform it is, and I'll try to reach out to you. And again, my name is Rad, and thanks for Brandon Webb having me host SoftRep, and I'll say peace.
You've been listening to SoftRep Radio.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.